specific to the sign, but may be for the city of Portland itself, as the other one is more related to a specific sale of a mug.
And one other category, I noticed that lots of local artists take that iconic image and then alter it in some way and right. incorporate it into their art. I assume there's a wholesale exception for people that use it in their art.
So what we're doing now is that in those cases where someone is using the sign, in the case of merchandising or specifically using the sign to help them to advocate or promote whatever their product is, that is a misuse of the sign if they do not have a license. And so what we'll do is send them and encourage them to get a license, or we'll send them a cease and desist letter.
But for example, if my son's fifth grade class has a project where they draw pictures of the sign, or if local artists, as part of doing art about Portland, incorporate the sign, I assume that's not covered by this policy.
That's correct. Again, that gets back to incidental versus a specific use of the sign.
So that's something, as you fine-tune the policy, I'd like to just make sure that incidental use, as it applies to artists who are incorporating the sign in an incidental way, is clearly defined, so we're not ensnaring people that are local artists for whom that's an iconic image in something that they're doing in whatever medium for which they would be required to get permission.
Will do.
Okay, so I've just realized why I was confused, and that's because I am confused about Exhibit B. If you look at page 3 of Exhibit B, it appears to be making changes about the Procurement Services Division, and I don't see how that relates to this current item.
Right. Celia Heron with the City's Office of Management and Finance. We took the opportunity when we opened up City Code to talk about the authorities of the Bureau of Business Internal Business Services Director. We looked at sections of code that are currently out of date. The Procurement Services Division used to be within Bryant's purview in his BIBS, Bureau. It is now being moved into the new Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. So being a fan of keeping his code as accurate as possible, when this came up as an edit, I suggested that we change the language in the respective sections of code to show that procurement is moving out of one section of OMF and into another, which is why you have 5 exhibits before you.
So it doesn't have anything to do with the Portland, Oregon sign?
That's correct. But yes, that's a source of the confusion.
Probably next time it would be better to have 2 separate ordinances, just so that it's clear to both me and the public. Because okay. I was like, how...
Point well taken.
Okay.
No actual connection. Good catch. Okay, other questions for Celia or Bryant? Thank you both very much. Okay. Anyone signed up to speak on this
Joe item? Walsh okay. requested to speak.
On up. Right. It's just first reading.
My name is Joe Walsh. For the record, I represent Individuals for Justice. We had 2 concerns about this. The first one was the last concern that was expressed by Commissioner Fritz, that there's a section in here that has absolutely nothing to do with the signs. And the section that we're most concerned with is something that I was personally just involved in, and that's the appeal process if you're excluded. I was excluded from this building for 30 days. There is an appeal process. The hearing officer hears the case, except if you go out of time. And here's the example. Suppose you excluded me for 10 days. You have 5 days to file the appeal. I did that. And they set the hearing 6 days after filed the appeal.
Wait a second, Joe. Does this affect the appeals process?
Yes, it does.
Which
if
page?
You keep reading, and let me finish,
but tell us where
I'll
it is.
Tie it up.
Tell us where it is, and we'll look at it.
It's okay. It starts on Exhibit A, where it says, develop and enforce rules of conduct. That's where it goes. And then gives the authority to the director to make a decision on exclusion. So that's the one that we're having the most problem with. And let me get to the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is you have no appeal process if you run out of time. And what happened with me was I ran out of time when the director is making all of the decisions. I made none. So we are asking you, if you open this up, and that's the testimony that you just had, they are connecting these two items that are not related, but they wanted to open it up. So open it up this way, and I will give the Parks and Recreation an attaboy on this. You, in your appeal process on your exclusions, have a provision that says once you file the appeal, everything stops. All the time limits stop. You don't have that in the most important building in Portland, this building. You don't have it. Because what happened with me is they declared my question moot. Because the hearing officer, even if he ruled in my favor, could not give me back the 30 days that I was excluded. That was the reasoning. However, since I represent Individuals for Justice here every week and I monitor what you do, you deprive me of a constitutional right. That will be the argument in federal court. So I'm asking you to look at this now and do what the Park Service did some time ago and say, let's freeze everything until the appeal is over. And if he loses the appeal, he must serve the exclusion.
Okay, thank you.
That's reasonable. Wait a minute, there's another part.
No, that's it. You're out of time. Thank you.
You went off on a tangent on me, and I answered your question.
I think we gave you the time. Go ahead.
Let me answer the first one. The first question is on a sign. This is an issue that you brought up and took down at least two times that I know. You are in a battle with Pabst Blue Ribbon.
No, wait a minute. We're done. We're settled.
Let me finish.
We've settled the case.
All right. But that was the catalyst for this.
Yes.
So you had to go back and rewrite everything because I think Pabst Blue Ribbon told you you were wrong because you had a reindeer here and you had a unicorn over there. They are not the same. So you get into a battle. You want to rewrite the rules now, and we object to that without a lot of discussion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
What was the settlement, by the way?
We'll tell you about it later. Go ahead, Charles.
Did they win?
No. Go ahead, Charles.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I think we will move to the front of our remarks. Our thanks to the Pabst Brewing Company for helping us explore this interesting area of intellectual property law. People need to know about the law, so I hope that you will engage with both Pabst and other artistic people in doing really a public presentation that brings to light how the city works together with businesses so that our iconic sign can be a tool that benefits both. I do want to say that I also looked at the 17-page PDF that comes along with this, so I understand Mr. Walsh's concern as we have some strikeout language there and some renumbering of different portions of the city code. And I think that perhaps that while it can pass at this reading, I don't oppose that, that you need to look at the ability of the president of the council and the mayor to improve, to be less exclusive, and also to improve the situation we have in the morning with public comment, so that people who have been in the audience at 9:30 might be able to make more spontaneous remarks to some of the serious issues that are facing the city. But as to this particular agreement with, or not agreement, but change into our city's structuring of how we it's hard to say how we protect the image of a city that has homeless people sleeping underneath the sign. So I think we'll have to also talk about where that revenue goes, that it doesn't just cover administrative costs. But now that he's back, I think it should go directly to Commissioner Schaltzman's bureau actually, that the sign that's hung over Burnside Bridge where people have died, any positive revenue that comes from that program should be used for humanitarian efforts to help the city's most endangered people that are sleeping tonight under that sign, unless some sweeps chase them away. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anyone else signed up? Let's take a roll call.
Mr. Mayor, I have some additional questions for staff.
All right. Come on back up.
And I may not actually be prepared to vote on this today.
Okay.
I commend or I'm in awe of Mr. Walsh for being able to testify on the changing of a capital B to a lowercase b to bring up the issue of the rules of conduct, and a supreme example of actually testifying on the issue at hand, but not necessarily so. But my question is regarding there's a proposed change to in Exhibit A, page 1, section 315.020b1, it's proposed to delete any proposed lease transaction shall first be reviewed and approved by the city's debt manager. And why?
I recommended that deletion because in this particular section, this section is articulating the authorities of the BIBS director, not of the authority of the city's debt manager. And so I talked with staff there, and I also, we acknowledged that the bureau director's requirement to comply with the city's investment policy and the city's debt management policy are already addressed. And so it would be as if to say, and here's one little rule you have to follow, where, quite frankly, the bureau director, in this case, the BIBS director, has to comply with all of the city's policy regarding debt management, which includes the coordination of proposed lease transactions.
So I don't have that language in front of me, though. So I'm.
No, yes, you do. It says, because the top line on B is listing a whole series of authorities for the BIBS director.
Where? What page?
The same page.
Page 1 of 3.15020, section B.
Yeah,
right. Where does it say that proposed lease transactions should be approved by the city's debt manager?
No, it used to say that. Now it's conferring that authority to the BIBS director, right? I got that right?
Well, the BIBS director, like all bureau directors, have to comply with the requirement of the city's debt management policy, a point of many of the 12
this
pages.
And everything else.
Yes.
Right. So the debt manager's authority is established elsewhere in code.
Yes.
Right. But this, I'm sorry, I'm really kind of hypoglycemic at this point. I'm not able to process this.
Can I ask a protocol question? Does this have to be passed today? You
no.
have this emergency.
No.
And if Commissioner Fritz is not comfortable voting today, we don't have the votes for an emergency. So just.
I'm happy to continue it.
Wouldn't mind continuing this a week so she can get answers to her questions.
It's not necessary for the resolution of our court case, right?
No.
So.
If it doesn't inconvenience you, why don't we put it over for a week?
Thank you.
Yes. So let's give you a chance to answer her questions in between, and we'll continue this for 1 week.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Now we have one more item, which is the non-emergency ordinance, just for first reading.
287, authorized third issuance of general obligation bonds for fire vehicles and emergency response infrastructure and general obligation refunding bonds.
His ears were burning. Here he is.
Indeed, right on cue. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager. This ordinance authorizes issuance of voter-approved general obligation bonds that will finance up to $18.9 million of public safety projects, including purchase of fire apparatus and completion of the PSSRP project. This is expected to be the final bond issuance under the $72.4 million public safety GO bond measure authorized by voters in 2010, and this will fund completion of the projects under that voter approval. The most recent bond issuance, the second bond issue under that program, occurred in March 2014, and those funds are nearing completion. Completion of spend down, as was expected. Total public safety program bond proceeds to date have been around $51.6 million out of the $72.4 authorized, which leaves $20.8 million remaining from the total authorized amount. This final request is approximately $2 million under that remaining amount, which results in a smaller final borrowing and therefore property tax savings to Portland taxpayers. As required under the voter authorization, the projects and financing plan have also been reviewed by an independent citizen committee, and there's an accompanying memo from the city's chief administrative officer that addresses that. That's included in the ordinance packet. Just a comment on the impact now that we're wrapping up the program. When the bond measure was proposed to voters in 2010, the projected levy impact for fiscal 15-16 was estimated at nearly 14 cents per every $1,000 of assessed value. Upon issuance of these final bonds, we now project a fiscal 15-16 levy rate that will be closer to 11 cents. This savings is the result of a few things, most critically the lower total amount of bonds that we're issuing from experiencing higher than projected growth in the property tax base, which is a good thing, and from receiving very, very favorable interest rates. And I'll mention, while 3 cents doesn't sound like a lot of money, that actually reflects a reduction in the projected citywide property tax levy of approximately $1 million. So that's $1 million less that we're asking Portland voters for to pay off those bonds. Additionally, with this ordinance, we also are asking for an opportunity to further reduce the levy by refunding some outstanding debt, the Series 2008 general obligation bonds, which are issued under a separate voter authorization from 1998 for emergency facilities projects. That refunding is expected to result in additional savings of around $50,000 per year through fiscal 27-28. And then we also expect to issue these, the new money bonds, the refunding bonds, as a single series to get some cost of issuance efficiencies as well. Property taxes generated by the 2015 bonds, generated by the levy associated with the 2015 bonds will be specifically dedicated to payment of the bonds and may only be used for that purpose. We expect to repay the bonds over a period of no more than 15 years, at which point the levy will expire. And we expect to sell these bonds via a competitive bidding process in late May of 2015, and be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for Jonas? Thank you very much. Anyone signed up to speak on this item?
I did not have a sign-up sheet out.
Okay. Then it comes back for second reading, and we're recessed until 2 p.m. Thank you.